All right, this is the first audio newsletter of Hippie Critical. So welcome. This is like a digest, a weekly digest in which I excavate from the world of the esoteric to bring you weekly puffs of magic hippie dust. And that is basically trends that I'm finding, my curiosities that I'm finding in the new age world. This may range from the world of alternative health to what hippies are now doing at festivals. What's that weird thing that they're doing? This week, I'll kick it off with something I've been working on for a while. It's ecstatic dance. So I wrote a whole guide to ecstatic dance, and hopefully it is the first of many quote-unquote guides to come, which cover a broad range of alternative practices that I've experienced myself, I've attended, and I now have a semi-authoritative, you know, view on it that combines research and all that stuff. So the first time I did ecstatic dance, I felt extremely awkward, uncomfortable, and also more free than ever. So in this new guide that I wrote, I talk about the benefits of ecstatic dance, its origins, and how to experience one for yourself and how to find one to attend. It can be free. You could totally do it by yourself, but it is most beneficial as a community event, and there are community rules. As part of the hippie index that I'm building, ecstatic dance definitely is classified as do it, try it in that category because it is so low risk. The benefits are very high in terms of just getting a natural dance high and meeting interesting people who are part of a conscious or new age community. And there's just a lot of upsides and just so little downsides, except for like a little bit of awkwardness. You're not going to have to ingest any charcoal or touch any healing crystals. I feel like this is a pretty easy recommendation. And in 2019, it was my favorite new hippie practice. Low cost, low risk. Anyway, read the guide. I'll include it in the show notes. And let me know, will you try ecstatic dance? The next thing I came across is the bad boy of yoga, who is Bikram Chowdhury. I watched the Netflix documentary called Bikram, Yogi, Guru, Predator. And this documentary covers the rise of Bikram Chowdhury in America. He set up a business that wasn't only lucrative, but funneled vulnerable women into his practice. In 2013, a series of sexual assault allegations against Bikram came online. And today, Bikram has not returned to the US. He's fled America, but he still conducts trainings all around the world. So I link to a Guardian article that covers the Bikram controversy in detail, including how he got away with things, abuses of power for so long. Here's a quote. Many trainees feared losing the thousands of dollars they had already spent on the fees. Their livelihood depends on putting up with it. The problem was that Bikram had set things up in such a way that without his continued patronage, you can't teach anywhere else. So some of his victims would come back to his training and just try to take precautions. And this is despite seeing really weird stuff going on, which you'll see in the Netflix documentary, like him inviting women up to his room during these Bikram teacher trainings very late at night. After watching the documentary, I was curious about how many studios in LA still went by the name Bikram Yoga. And turns out in LA, there's still a handful. And, you know, there's one in downtown. And my initial reaction was honestly surprise. I was thinking like, how could there be so many yoga studios still touting Bikram's name when the allegations against him are so widely known? But it turns out the story is curiouser. And you actually don't really get this in the Netflix documentary. I had to dig it up myself. So Bikram's ex-lawyer, Mickey Jaffa Bowden, won a sexual harassment suit against Bikram, but she never got paid since he fled the country. So the court turned over Bikram's assets, including rights to his US-based yoga studios, to Mickey Jaffa Bowden. And here I quote, all of which leaves Jaffa Bowden with a dilemma. She is effectively president of Bikram Inc., but there are serious issues with the name. In the process of quote-unquote de-Bikramization, She wants to separate the yoga from the man who created it. Not so easy when it's a brand known the world over. And actually, most devotees don't really make the connection with the megalomaniac in Speedos. I certainly didn't. I just saw Bikram yoga and I just thought, oh, hot yoga. And I thought maybe Bikram was some like ancient Indian practice. Very ignorant of me. So she still remains devoted to the Bikram community. Can she rebuild the business as something new? So what an interesting challenge. Like now I don't feel this like ignorant rage of like, why is there still Bikram yoga studios? And realizing, oh my gosh, like the person who sued Bikram, she's now the president of it, trying to turn it around, trying to make some of her money back because she never got paid. So as someone who's tried hot yoga and thought it was a great workout, this really made me question, when something becomes useful, but society discovers that the person or group who created it is corrupt, what is the right thing to do? I discovered that in psychology, there's something called the anchoring effect, which is when people depend on an initial piece of information to make subsequent judgments. So it sucks. Basically, it's judging a cover by its book. When there's one piece of information out, especially if it's negative, people tend to latch onto it without knowing the whole story. I'm definitely vulnerable to this anchoring effect as well. So let's say that it was discovered that Walt Disney was a sexual offender. I actually don't know if he is or wasn't. I'm just making up a random example. So would the company change names? You know, the business is so much bigger than who he was at the time of founding Disney. There's now thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of workers for Disney Corporation. And do they deserve to be, you know, let go or tainted just because decades ago, the founder did something wrong? I find this, you know, I don't have the moral study background to attack this question of morality, but it's very interesting. And I could see that in one way, it's unfair because even someone like me who's looking into Bikram, I had this automatic reaction until like, I Googled around and read more articles and realized the story goes much deeper. So the last piece that I shared was about how one woman quit astrology. And her name is Felicity Carter, and she wrote a Guardian article. And I think it's really brave when someone publicly shares how they believe they've been wrong about something and that they changed their mind. It takes, I think, a lot of bravery to say that about yourself in a public forum. Her Guardian article talked about how people paid her to be an astrologer, apparently she was quite good at it, and why she had to quit. Here's one quote that resonated with me and made me a little bit more empathetic of the astrology obsessed. It turned out what most people want is a chance to unload for an hour. The range of problems faced by people who could afford $50 for fortune telling turn out to be limited. Troubles with romance, troubles at work, trouble mustering the courage for a much needed change. I heard these stories so often, I could often guess what the problem was the moment someone walked in. Heartbroken young men, for example, talk about it to psychics because it's less risky than telling their friends. I love that quote because it kind of shows a human side of what drives people to astrology and that there are maybe basic incentives in place to do that. You know, yeah, it would be less risky to tell your friends or family something that's kind of sensitive and maybe you just want a third party who is quote-unquote spiritual to give you some guidance. The Atlantic also has a great piece on why astrology is so popular with millennials. Hint, it's all about stress. I'll share that in the show notes as well. I think that while astrology is widely regarded as non-scientific, it's making more and more sense to me as a combination of entertainment and stress management. I wrote an article once called Chaos versus Order, in which I posit that the world is chaotic and our brains demand order. You know, not a difficult idea to agree with or get behind. And I'm thinking that, you know, horoscopes are mostly free. They feel personalized and it's an anonymous thing to do. It's basically risk-free. So I could understand why it could help as a way to have someone get a sense of assurance in life. You know, just as countless people around the world pray to their deities or seek solace in something that's a little bit more sure, a little bit more everlong than their human condition. So I could fuck with free therapy. There's far worse addictions we could use to comfort ourselves. Now, going back and forth on this topic, when does this become dangerous? You know, astrology is one of the big hypocritical topics I'll be examining and following, so stay tuned. I want to look at both sides of these New Age practices. I think that as stress management, astrology, fine, doesn't hurt no one. But when people start making radical life decisions, or perhaps spending thousands of dollars that maybe they don't have, or going into debt for astrology training or readings or, you know, so on and so forth, okay, when does this obsession become dangerous? That's what I'm really interested in. The light and dark side, if you will. As the first audio format of The Hypocritical, I want your opinion on this newsletter, the content and the format. I love any interaction from you, whether it is dropping a voice note in Anchor. You could do that now. Pretty cool. Email, which is im, the letters im, at hypocritical.org. Or just shoot me an email on the topics covered today. So what do you think of ecstatic dance? Will you try it? Have you ever tried Bikram yoga? What's your take on astrology and horoscopes? If you enjoyed this, I'd love it if you shared it with your friends, family, ex-lovers. You could send them to hippiecritical.org/newsletter to sign up. I try to make it one of the best emails you get each week, and I hope you're enjoying it. And if you come across something interesting in the New Age world, the world of the esoteric, send it my way. I love finding new things to read through members of Hypocritical. Thank you. See you next week.